Hello, friends and neighbors. This is Dave Slusher with the Evil Genius Chronicles. EvilGeniusChronicles.org is the site. Today is Monday, September 20th, 2004. If you listened to my entry from yesterday when I was goofing around and trying to talk like a pirate, I was so enthralled with that I got the date wrong. So yesterday was the 19th, which of course I knew because I had to do all this stuff to set up the 19th as my cron job to turn that Blossom plugin on and off. So if you happened to be looking at my weblog yesterday, you will see I had the Blog Like a Pirate plugin turned on for a little while, and then I, of course, like everyone does, get tired of it and turned it off. So we should see on the sound of today's episode, we'll see actually if this sounds any different to anyone. If it does, leave me some feedback. I'm actually trying something a little differently with my... It's just nothing probably anyone would really notice. I'm trying a little different mic layout, and I'm trying to set it up so I'm talking more directly towards the microphone. Microphone that I have has kind of a cardioid response, where like right in front of it is where all the action happens and is less at the sides, and it, you know, like with distance, as you get away from the mic very quickly, it falls off, so you don't pick a lot of room noise up and things like that. So, you know, I'm trying to make sure that I'm actually, you know, talking to the good part of the microphone when I'm doing this. And so I think I may have been talking too much to the side, so this actually should sound a little better. If it's noticeable to you, let me know. You know, I like to keep up with these things. And I've caught myself doing this a few times lately, and I think I just sort of did it, was that where I drift off, and in one of the early episodes, I talked about how when you interview people, people have a tendency to start out strong, and then the longer they talk, they get quieter and quieter, and it gets harder and harder. And they make your life a nightmare if you're trying to keep a level on them. Well, and I've caught myself doing the same thing, where, you know, 10 minutes into it, I'm talking significantly quieter than where I started out. And, you know, I set all the levels based on the earlier volumes, and then I don't maintain it. So I'm going to do my best to, like, do, you know, the ultimate control of this is, you know, deep in my diaphragm, right? No amount of knob switching can handle the fact that if I'm drifting off, then, you know, that's it. So you should also maybe, I don't know if anyone will notice this on the theme song and the music bed. When I went to prepare yesterday's episode, I had an unpleasant surprise in that the music file that I use, you know, which is already kind of assembled and looped and leveled and all that fun stuff, was corrupted. And so 5 seconds into it, it would just start going, there was one of the guitar notes, and it would go, and then disappear. And then so after about 15 seconds, the whole 45 minutes of this file was just quiet, just completely silent. And I tried multiple things to recover it, and you know, it didn't work, so I had to suck it up and just do that again, which I wasn't looking forward to. So I took the original song, you know, kind of found the same starting point, and went back to, you know, cut out basically like the last minute and a half of the song, and I tried to before, you know, find a good point so that when I cut and pasted it, it wouldn't be glaringly noticeable, which I don't think I succeeded with. I think if you listen to any of the old episodes, it is glaringly obvious when the end of the thing goes back to the beginning. It didn't quite match the beat, and so there's a stutter step in there. Well, this time, I actually got the beat match, I think, exactly. Now, the fact that the way the song fades out, it's a very long, slow fade-out. So, if I wanted to catch it where the piano had calmed down, like towards the end of the song, is where the piano really starts going nuts. So I wanted to catch the where the piano you know, had stopped, so you wouldn't hear the piano going crazy and then just nothing. But by that point, it's faded down so much that I would have to do a lot of work to fade it back up, and it would sound funky. So you'll hear the, although the actual, like the bass and the guitar and the drums and everything match almost perfectly this time. They match way better than they did before. The piano was like, you know, just rolling along, and then the piano ceases when you come back to the beginning. So that's your cue. If you notice the piano dropping out suddenly, you shouldn't, if it wasn't for that, I think it would almost be an imperceptible edit. And, you know, the first time I did this, it probably took me 90 minutes. It might have taken 2 hours to assemble this. And the second time was maybe 15, 20 minutes. So having another month of Audacity editing under my belt certainly helped on that one. But so that was a little effort I hadn't budgeted in putting in there. And so luckily now I've got saved copies of that should be fine. So I exported like the whole edited leveled thing as a wave. And if my working, you know, Audacity file copy ever gets ruined again, I should be able to re-import that wave. So I hadn't thought through to audio corruption as a strategy, recovering from audio corruption as a strategy. In the Reality Break days, when Sound Edit 16 used to crash my Macintosh Performa at least once every editing session, and sometimes multiple times. I'd edit the show sometimes and have everything ready to go, and in the course of saving it, it would lock up the computer. And so I'd have to go back and, when you're in one of those situations, you try to remember to save often, and every time you lose a lot of work, you think, oh, next time I'm going to save more frequently, and you don't. And so now it's just, how much work did I lose since the last time? And, always is a sinking feeling. This time it wasn't so bad, and even with a corruption once a month, that puts it about two orders of magnitude better than what Sound Edit used to do for me. So it's been a really lovely day here in Conway, and yesterday was lovely as well. Low 70s, a little bit of an ocean breeze. We're about 10 miles from the ocean, but you still get it still smells a little like the ocean, and smells like the smells like southern fall. Lots of the fall blooming bushes, are out in force, and there's something, we don't know what it is, but it smells to me like sassafras tea. I mean, maybe it's a sassafras bush, or maybe it's something that just smells like it. But I spent a little time on our screened-in back porch today. Sat out there with my laptop, got a great Wi-Fi signal. For various reasons, I actually need to use the PC desktop, large chunks of my day, so I can't really spend all day out there. But, it was nice to, spend 20 minutes out there just answering some email on the back porch. And I had considered audio blogging from the back porch yesterday, but there's just, if just talking into the iBook like I used to do, maybe I would, but there's too much equipment involved now. And while I could do it, I don't really feel like being my own roadie and tearing down and setting up and schlepping things across the house. So I just didn't do it. But this screened-in porch in this new house, it is nice, and particularly this time of the year. Yesterday, we went to see Edwin McCain, who is a Southern artist. I think he lives in Atlanta now, who actually went to Coastal Carolina University for one semester. And he was very clear about that at the concert last night, that he's not technically an alumnus because he didn't graduate from anywhere, much less here. And it was pretty good. This is where the nice day led me astray, because I was well underdressed. Once the sun went down and things got rolling, it got chilly, and I was just wearing a shorts and a short sleeve shirt and sandals, and I could have stood to be wearing more clothes. But the show was pretty good. Edwin McCain is on the mainstream side of the kind of singer songwriters that I like, but he's on the edge, but he's still in the pocket, and it was a good show, and I'm glad we went. And in a little town like this, when you've got guys of that, guys like that playing, out on the football field. There were probably maybe 1,200 people there, kind of sitting in they had a stage set up in the middle of the football field, like at the 50-yard line, right up to the bleachers. So it was reasonably intimate, even though we were sitting in the seats of the football field. And if something like that's available in a place like this, you got to take advantage of it, because you don't get opportunities like that every day. What else do I want to talk about? Oh, the BitTorrent experiment continues. So at this moment, I'm seeding the last four BitTorrent files. And I'm assuming that today, I don't see any reason why today would be different. I'll seed this up there, and I'll do the same thing. Publish this first as BitTorrent. A few hours later, I'll do the MP3. I actually went all night because I forgot to do it before I went to bed. So first thing this morning, I added the MP3 up there. One of the things I have to determine for myself is what's the limit of this. So after today I'll have five episodes up there. How many BitTorrent links do I want to have in my feed, and how many do I want to seed? It seems only reasonable that anything I'm offering in the feed, the BitTorrent RSS feed, that I should continue seeding myself just to guarantee that those exist. Now with Azurius, it's not that hard to keep seeding. In fact, by default, if you kill it and open it back up, you'll keep seeding everything that you were seeding before. So in that respect, up to the point where I've got so many that bandwidth just becomes an issue. There's no particular management problem with me seeding lots of these files. I'm thinking I've got five. I don't know if I want to maybe keep five. Maybe I want to do more. I just don't know. Maybe I'll do 10, the last 10, and then, you know, those will roll off. Or maybe I'll have 10 in the feed, and, you know, numbers 6 through 10, I won't necessarily be seeding, so they would only have a seed if somebody else happens to be doing it. I just don't know. Anybody has any input, by God, I'm all ears on that. Again, I'm kind of thinking out loud, and I'm kind of, you know, feeling my way. I don't necessarily know what I'm doing with this kind of stuff, but... You know, I'm just sort of making the mistakes now and you know, figuring out what I can figure out. And as far as I can tell, I'm not sure who else is publishing the BitTorrent feeds like this for their audio blogs. I'm sure somewhere somebody is doing it, but I don't know of any, you know, any of the circle of audio bloggers that's doing it. I played around a little more with iSpider, and I think Race Lipkinski is adding the BitTorrent support to PiPotter. And so opinions are varied on this. I actually think that the BitTorrent support is essential. Like I say, the swarming characteristics of what happens when you put a file in a feed for the first time match very well with the strengths of BitTorrent. So people are talking about, you know, the archive.org free cache and that Coral cache. All those things... I prefer BitTorrent, and as I said, it makes me a little nervous the thought of embedding in the scripts supports for external cache systems that may or may not be there, and, you know, if those go away, then your script gets funky, or at least your script will have to retry because it'll be trying a system that's not there anymore. So, I don't know. I'm still on the fence about that one, but I gotta say that I'm liking this BitTorrent way to go, and... you know, if it were ubiquitous and, you know, any podcaster could be assured that the iPodder scripts that are getting it understand BitTorrent, dude, I think it's a no-brainer. Just, you know, set up a tracker or, you know, have a audio, you know, general audio blog tracker or something, you know, get a cooperative of people that set up a tracker for this and have at it. It seems like a good idea to me. I haven't got sign off that I can talk about this yet, but there's things in the works. And to that end, I found myself, I'm going to be cryptic about this, and you know, I apologize for that. I'm not being cryptic for the sake of being cryptic. There's a project in the works about which I need to be discreet until I'm told I can spill the beans. But so I ended up playing around with a Brad Sucks song. He's on Magnitude. And this guy does something interesting. He releases what he calls the source code. He releases like the component wave files that he's used to edit together to make his songs. And so then he allows his fans to remix them. And I think the deal is that if you remix it, you have to tell him about it. You have to post an URL, email him an URL so he knows how to find it. And so, you know, some of the remixes, you know, are pretty faithful. Some of them are way out there, like barely or unrecognizable. And so I found myself kind of playing around with his loops to make me a little piece of a Brad Sucks song. And so it was his song Dirtbag. And so it starts out with an acoustic guitar, and then later on it gets electric. And I was playing around with it and kind of having the acoustic and electric simultaneous, where the electric was kind of underneath the acoustic guitar, stiffing it up. And as I'm playing around with this, and as I usually don't do stuff like this other than, you know, a few minutes of playing with GarageBand. You know, I've never really taken a song and remixed it and played with the component parts of a song like this before. But it was very easy with his stuff because it was mostly set up on these 12-second four-bar loops. You know, it's an 80-beat-per-minute song, so every 12 seconds has 16 beats, and so it was very mathematical, and so I found it very easy to work with, right? 3 seconds per bar, 12 seconds per section, 12 seconds per each wave file loop. And so I said, I want a minute of this. So I just cut and pasted five of those things in a row. And then I kind of, was playing around with the relative levels. And I'm in there, and one of the tracks was this tambourine. And as I'm playing with the tambourine and mixing it up and down, I had this thought occur to me. And I know this won't make much sense to our international listeners, but for those of you who watch Saturday Night Live and you remember the Christopher Walken sketch where he was music producer Bruce Dickinson, And I'm going to try to do this in a Christopher Walken voice. As I'm farting around with this thing and making the tambourine louder and softer, all I can think is, this needs more cowbell. I got a fever that can only be cured with more cowbell. And so I can hear that sketch, which I think is actually one of the funniest Saturday Night Live sketches of all time. And so I'm hearing that, and every time I'm playing with the tambourine track, I'm thinking, more cowbell. I'm sitting there in my living room while my wife is, you know, on the couch doing work, and I've got my laptop and headphones, and I'm playing with the laptop and just giggling. And you know, what's fun? What's so funny? More cowbell. So if you ever wonder why I get my eyes rolled at, me a lot around the house, this is exactly the same thing. And, you know, while I'm on the subject of that sketch, I just want to bring that sketch up because I think that sketch is one of those oddities. I think it's, as I say, I think it's one of the funniest sketches in the history of Saturday Night Live. And it's so odd and so, the premise is so slight and yet the sketch is so funny. And so I know a lot of people who talk about, you know, either, you know, like in the context of writing a book, you know, they talk about, oh, I've got this great idea for a book, or I've got this great idea for a business. Well, that's one of the best sketches ever in Saturday Night Live history, and it's got one of the dumbest ideas, the slightest, most nothing ideas. It's, the entire sketch is based on the observation that, hey, the Blue Oyster Cult song Don't Fear the Reaper, for a rock song of that era, it has a lot of cowbell in it. Why do you suppose there's so much cowbell in that song? You don't hear much cowbell in rock and roll. And from there, the whole hilarious sketch, you know, descends from that. You know, it's helped made more funny by, for me, it was even more funny because I actually, you know, care a little about that era Blue Oyster Cult. You know, so seeing, you know, Chris Parnell and, you know, these guys made up as Donald Rozier and Buck Dharma. I think that's funny, you know, Fu Manchu mustaches and funny shirts and all that stuff. So, but the point here is, some of the best work comes from the stupidest freaking ideas or things that seem slight, and it's all in the execution. So one of the places I think to not censor yourself is at the idea level. And Loic Lemure is actually really good at this, where he talks about how in startups people are also secretive about their ideas. And he said the idea is in almost any startup is the least of it. You know, take any idea, the difference between a successful and an unsuccessful business is seldom the idea. It's, you know, it's in the execution and it's in the planning and it's how well those people who are spending 100 hours a week, you know, sleeping under their desk, are they spinning wheels? Are they getting anything done? And so he went through and he posted a bunch of startup ideas. He's like, if you can do any of these better than me, then you deserve to succeed with them. And so I've always loved that attitude, you know, it's the idea is just the least of it. You know, it's sitting, it's like you sit down and people say, I got the idea for the novel. You think, well, great. That and, you know, a couple months of sitting your ass in a chair and coming up with 100,000 good words, that's, you know, the idea plus that will give you a novel. You know, until you have done the couple months work, then, you know, don't talk to me about it. It's my musings on that. Not that I have ever written a novel, but I got a great idea for one. Okay. One other thing I wanted to talk about, and so I seldom read lots of stuff verbatim, but I actually want to read this post from Seth Godin. It's pretty short, but it's this post he put out this morning. And so Seth is pretty good. I read his Spreading the Idea Virus ebook not that long ago. And so I like a lot, you know, I don't, he says stuff that I don't necessarily agree with, but in general, you know, I like his attitude and I like the direction he takes things. And this is his 10 lies to protect the status quo. Number one, Canadian pharmaceuticals are dangerous. Number two, piracy is killing the ongoing creation of music and movies. And he has a note there. Notice I didn't say anything about the movie and music business. Number three, dental work lasts forever. Number four, a bottle of Evian is dangerous to airline security and must be surrendered. Number five, the Microsoft monopoly pays dividends to all users, like IE, for example. Number six, you can't start a business without venture money or a big loan. Number seven, working hard for your boss and following instructions is the best way to get ahead. Number eight, we need to spend taxpayer money on support for traditional factory farming. Number nine, it's impossible to make a fuel-efficient automobile that Americans will accept. Number 10, who you know is more important than what you do. So he's saying that all of these are lies that are thrown out there to keep the keep the barrier to entry high, to keep new people from coming in, to keep people from challenging, upsetting the apple cart. And I definitely agree with some of this. I think one of the more harmful things that I've seen from people, who, again, have these great ideas and want to start businesses, is this notion that you got to go out and get the venture money, that you've got to, the venture money. This was a big problem in the dot-com era, was that the venture money was the goal. You know, once you got the venture money or once you got the IPO, that essentially that was hitting the finish line tape. When really it should have just been, that should have been the starting block, right? It just seats you better it gives you better footing for the race. And, so I've seen a lot of, sensible people kind of crushed by that race for the venture money, or, the belief that that's what they need, or, not even bothering to make a go of something when they had the capability and the wherewithal to probably have made a successful business, because they thought, well, I can't get the venture money and I can't do this without that. And a case in point, a company that I think everyone seems to think they have the venture money because they've done all right and they've done the things you would think would require it, but that's FictionWise. They're an ebook publisher, and they've been around, I guess, for something like 5-6 years now. And so they're definitely not, they're not going to displace Bertelsmann anytime, in the next decade or so. But, they've started from the grassroots and the ground up, and they're building a pretty successful business. And I think that they say that their sales and revenue grow something like 20% a quarter. So, when you're starting from a small, very, very small intake at the beginning, you can grow 20% a quarter for many, many quarters and not necessarily get to serious money. But, that suggests that they're on the right path. And these guys did it entirely with self-funding. Unless something has changed recently, they've never taken venture money. And I actually kind of like that. The old-fashioned model where you start small and you build up and you make some money and you use that money to fund the future and you keep going. The notion that you start with one store and then you open another store before you begin the empire. And, sort of Amazon.com kind of turned that upside down with this notion of start huge and stay huge and try to outrun your own bankruptcy. And the fact that Amazon succeeded at that does not change the fact that 99% of the companies that tried that, had their shit auctioned at salvage rates, eToys.com and Pets.com and all the kind of prototypical detritus of eras gone by. Intertrust, which I was a part of at one point. So that can be done. And that's one of the things I think about is, that if more people, it's harder to set yourself on a task like that and think that you're going to do it, pull yourself up from the bootstraps. And it seems in this era, it's kind of impossible sometimes, but it's still possible for businesses to scale that way. I mean, I have a server box that I rent for $100 a month that could run, most reasonable sized startups. You could run a pretty good web business on this $100 a month server that I rent. And so there's still no huge barrier to entry, for a lot of classes of startups. And I'm thinking in the terms of, podcasting startups. You've got companies out there doing that. Well, somewhere along the line, it's bound to happen as we kind of think about this and the ideas seep in and everybody gets more excited. We're gonna have, arguably, I guess IT Conversation is already the first podcasting network, but we're gonna see media startups based around the podcasting idea. And so I guess somewhere will be the first one to come kind of after this frenzy, because, IT Conversations actually kind of preceded it and in some ways helped usher it in. And so somewhere we're going to see some company whose business model is based on podcasting, whose business plan, and if they try to get VC money, that'll be in there. Maybe that term will be in there. But, it's worth thinking about. But one of the things that makes this great is the fact that it is entirely possible for this to start small and scale. I mean, I'm sitting here and I'm sitting in front of the mic for half an hour, but that doesn't have to be what I'm doing. I could be doing, you know, some kind of, you know, I could be doing a call-in show, you know, kind of like Adam Curry did with Dave Weiner, or I could be taking, you know, listener calls, or, you know, doing whatever, and it would be essentially the same dynamic. And so a lot of people could get into this game, you know. The rising up of the status quo typically will try to prevent that. And as we've seen, and, you know, as I got from that Free Culture book by Lawrence Lessig, the old businesses do everything they can to work the system to close the gates to the new business models. And I would certainly expect that to happen in this revenue, in this venue. And, you know, some of it will happen via the copyright path and via the leverage that big media can exercise. And, you know, so I might be pleasantly surprised, and we might actually see big media come more towards this way than you would expect. So these are very, very interesting times. And as I have said every day for the most recent few, I'm glad to be playing in this glad to be playing in this sandbox at this time. I am really, really enjoying it. So I'm going to wrap it up there. Covered most of the list. I actually had a few other things, but I think I'll save them for tomorrow, because I'm already longish, and I'm probably a little... There's a few songs that I want to bring in. As a teaser, I think I'm going to play something in one of the upcoming shows by Southern Culture on the Skids. And when I do, I'll tell the story of how one night I sang on stage with them in a Mexican wrestling mask. So just to whet your appetite, there is a story there. And it also involves the wrestler Abdullah the Butcher. So it's quite a story. Or at least it's the best story you're going to get out of this very boring life I lead. So thanks everyone for listening. This has been Dave Slusher for Evil Genius Chronicles. EvilGeniusChronicles.org is the blog. You can send your feedback to dslusher@gmail.com. Today is Monday, September 20th, and I will catch you again on the flip-flop, good buddy. Breaker 1-9, I'm out. Bye.